You're listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Ryan, the movie guy, and this week on CinemaJaw, Matt, the Jaw gets a reboot as we go with our top five favorite reboots of series or series we want to see rebooted.
Yeah, we're not actually changing anything. There's no specific reason we're doing reboots.
Well, there is, Matt. We should say that Spider-Man is actually getting a reboot in theaters, and that's what really spawned this whole subject.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and there's a ton of reboots coming out. I mean, I guess you could kind of call maybe Prometheus a reboot, and there's a bunch of stuff coming out next summer, too. So, yeah, it's a timely topic, but not necessarily tied into, you know, we're not rebooting CinemaJaw. It's not number one.
Absolutely. We are not rebooting anything. We're on a roll here,
That's
Matt.
Right. Yes. It's perfect. Why
in addition to our top five favorite reboots and such that we will go round robin with, we're going to have a guest be joining us, Haima Black, who's got a podcast here in Chicago, talks all kinds of music with bands. He's got great interviews.
Yep.
Former Q101 guy and also now on JBTV.
That's right.
So he's going to sit down. He's got his five favorite reboots. He sort of has seen or wants to see. In addition to that, we got theater reviews. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yep, I saw that. It was awesome.
And also, we got DVD reviews for you of 21 Jump Street and Project Nim, which I caught over the week.
Sweet.
So it's a jam-packed jaw, as we always say, Matt.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, so we're going to get right to it. We're going to bring in our guest, Haima Black. Am I saying that correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
Welcome to CinemaJaw.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here, dude. So. Yeah. Tell us about the podcast network and all that.
Yeah, take us back actually to the Q101 days because you were involved in a really cool show there, Local 101, correct?
Yeah. The kind of the very quick version is in, this goes back, summer 1998. I was very, very, very lucky enough. I was a freshman in high school at the time. I was lucky enough to land an internship with Chris Payne, who is, you know, he was a longtime DJ in the Chicago rock community. He worked at a station called Rock 103.5, and I landed an internship with him at Rock 103.5. And this was even after I had just started an internship at Loyola College Radio. So in 1998, I was doing a lot of radio stuff as a like freshman, you know, in high school. So I worked with Chris right after I started doing this Loyola stuff. And Chris and I were at Rock 103.5. I was lucky enough to come on board as an intern with him. Summer 98, and then by fall 98, Rock 103.5 switched formats. So Chris jumped ship to Q101, and this is literally how it happened. About a week or two after the Rock went off, I woke up one morning, I turned on my radio, I heard a DJ on Q101, and I go, this isn't one of the normal Q101 DJs, I wasn't awake yet. And then I was like, oh wait, you know who this is? So I called the Q101 request line, and I was like, hey Chris, do you need an intern at Q101? And no joke, I mean, that was November 98, and that phone call took me up through last summer, 2011.
All the way until the station shut down.
All the way, yeah, to the last minutes. So it's pretty crazy. It's stories like that do not often happen in radio. I was very, very fortunate. So I was at Q101 for 13 years, believe
Holy
it or not.
Moly.
Wow.
I mean, just short of half my life at the time. And I worked on Local 101, which was the Chicago music show, from 2001 until 2011. And that was the last show that aired on Q101. That was the last live segment was Local 101, and I got to be part of that and, helped take the station off with Chris Payne and Pogo. Pogo, I know, who has been on this show before.
Mm-hmm. We love him here.
Absolutely. So I was very, very fortunate to be part of Local 101, to be part of Q101, to work in major rock radio in Chicago, all things that I was extraordinarily fortunate to be a part of, you know?
During that time, especially, we had some great bands coming up here in Chicago
on the
local scene. What were some of the cool interviews or things that you got to be a part of during those glorious years?
You know what? It really was kind of this great time to be involved in the Chicago rock scene because you had so much happening in different genres. On like one end, I remember first hearing Kanye West. And going up to one of my Southside producer friends the next day and being like, have you heard of this dude, Kane West? We got to do some really early interviews with Fall Out Boy, which was really cool, and Rise Against, back when those were kind of young, unknown bands.
Yeah, they were nobodies back then. I mean,
what was cool is Q101 was unique in that we had a advanced warning that the station was going to be switching formats. We knew it was coming for a little bit. You know, we didn't know the final date, but we knew that we were living on borrowed time. So on Local 101, we got to bring on some of our longtime favorite guests again to kind of do like a final interview on this show with them. And when I was talking with Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy, who now, you know, is doing other stuff, we were discussing the first Fallout Boy interview that I had done with them, and he admitted to me that he believes, and I'm taking his word for this, he believes that that was the first Fallout Boy radio interview.
Really?
Yeah. So, and that was something I did early on, and it's a horrible interview on my end. I don't know what I'm doing at all. I've still got the audio on my hard drive. But we really did get to just do some rad interviews with some great bands who were coming up at the time and who went on to have tremendous, amazing success, you know? So it was very cool to get to be a tiny part of that and see things early on.
And of course, this probably inspired your sort of next adventure as you went into podcasting, which you've been doing for quite a few years already.
Yeah,
About
7 years.
Oh, seven now. Years.
See, yeah, you were one of the pioneers. I mean, podcasting hasn't been around all that long.
Yeah. So. You know, I mean, it was just kind of something I stumbled on. I was really, and still am, passionate about digital media. And there were so many cool, different digital media things that were coming out at the time. And social media and MySpace was still kind of new. So I was really passionate about digital media. I was already doing radio. I was already interested in local music. So it just kind of, when I saw that I could do my own version of a radio show, but do it on the radio or do it on the internet, say whatever I want, book whoever I want, that was really enticing to me. Even though Local 101 was great, we had a lot of freedom. You know, Chris was extraordinarily generous. You know, it was a partnership. It was never him telling me, like, no, you can't book them. We have to do this. Like, you know, we worked together as partners, you know, and so that was great. So it wasn't anything where I was like, I can't get to do what I want at Q101. It was more just like, okay, I have this great gig at Q101, but what if I got to do something that was totally my vision? You know, no one can cancel it. No one can change the format. We can book whoever we want. The interviews can be 5 minutes or 5 hours, you know. So that was really what drew me into that in like August 2005.
And what's the name of the podcast for the jawheads listening to this at home?
Yeah, it's Dynasty Podcasts. That's the kind of like umbrella operation, you know, and we've got a couple different shows. The main show is Chicago vs. United, which is such a clunky title. I wish I had thought that through more. But that is a show I do every single week, sometimes a couple times a week, and I talk to artists and industry in the Chicago music community.
And these are wildly successful. I mean, you have like thousands of followers on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, you've found quite a bit of success with this podcasting network.
You know, yeah, I've been lucky. I think that I think people are just passionate about local music and the Chicago scene. You know, it's nothing to do with people wanting to hear my voice. It's just that I think that I've been lucky in being able to get really, really solid interviews with great talent, great industry people. And it's the kind of stuff that if I wasn't hosting this, these are the people I'd want to hear conversation with.
Interesting conversation really drives the podcast audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you guys absolutely have that on the show. You know, you guys host together and you've got great guests all the time. So, yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. So the Jawheads listening at this, where's the best place to find it on the internet? If they want to download it, is it best to go to iTunes or your site?
You know, iTunes is something I still haven't cracked. I've been doing this for 7 years. I have no excuse. I'm really in love with SoundCloud as a platform for the podcast. And full disclosure, I've started doing some stuff in Chicago, some kind of like rep work in conjunction with SoundCloud. Not exactly working for them, but...
like affiliate type
stuff? Yeah, kind of like affiliate type stuff, you know, kind of ambassador type stuff. So, but I was passionate about SoundCloud long before that just started. So SoundCloud.com/DynastyPodcast, plural, is a great place to be able to check out all the shows, download them, try to keep it real organized with playlists and stuff so you can just scan through and grab whatever you want, stream or download it.
And I also noticed as I was preparing for the show that you're quite a Twitter head. What's your Twitter handle for people to follow?
Sure, it's Jaime Black, Jaime Black, so all one word. And again, it's Jaime, not Jamie, Jamie, so... Hopefully they get that.
Yeah. Well, Jaime Black is going to be sitting in on this entire jaw, Matt. And it's pretty exciting. We love our Q101 guys. I think this is like the third or fourth Q101 alum that we've had on the show.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a good group of people to be associated with.
Yeah, I got to hear the Pogo episode and the JVO episode. Both of those were really fun to get to hear those guys talking kind of on a radio-style program again. Because in addition to working with those guys, I'm always... a fan of hearing their work, too.
And we should also mention the other adventure you got going on now, which is a local show here. Started, I guess, here in Chicago, but really now you're telling me it's national, which is JBTV.
Yes, JBTV. I was just recently, it's still a very new thing for me. was just recently invited to be a part of that operation, and I mean, really that legacy, because that show's been going about 28 years now.
It's crazy. He's got some great guests on that show as well.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about history. Jerry Bryant has seen it all and done it all. He's had on, you know, members of the Ramones, like Alice in Chains. Like, it's crazy the history that they have on that show. So it's very exciting to get to be a small part of that.
It's right up your alley, too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I really dig it. And again, it's just something where, like, I'm entering into something that has such a legacy in Chicago and outside of Chicago. So it's very, you know, I'm honored to be there.
Awesome. So definitely, Jawheads, check out JBTV. Follow along.
Yep.
Yeah.
Follow him on Twitter, too.
Yes. All right. So he's sitting in on the entire episode, Matt. And as we get to our reboots, before we go there, there's some new movies opening up in the theater. And this is a segment we call Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
the new 400 Theater.
And you know what the best thing is about the new 400 theaters, Matt?
I do. But why don't you tell me again?
It's a full liquor bar. That is awesome. Full liquor bar right at the concession stand. Get a beer, get a wine, get a cocktail, and enjoy a movie.
Yeah, and they always have cool movie-themed cocktails for you to enjoy. Also, they got the best prices for first-run movies in Chicago. So
definitely check them out. Check what's playing out at the new 400 theaters at thenew400.com.
And we thank them for their support.
Eye for an Eye this week, Matt, the amazing Spider-Man.
Ooh.
Peter Parker finds a clue that might help him understand why his parents disappeared when he was young. His path puts him on a collision course with Dr. Kurt Connors, his father's former partner. Playing the web-slinger this time around is Andrew Garfield, best known for his role in The Social Network. And playing Gwen Stacy is Emma Stone. The film is directed by, no pun intended here, Mark Webb, who's best known for 500 Days of Summer. Matt, interested or ignore on The Amazing Spider-Man?
I'm interested. I mean, everyone knows who listens to the show. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, so I might be a little biased. But I'm interested.
We throw it over to Mr. Black. Interested or ignore?
Yeah, I'm absolutely interested. I really want to see what they're doing with it. I liked the first two Spider-Man movies. I don't think anyone liked the third Spider-Man movie. It looks cool. It looks dark and gritty, and I'm a sucker for dark and gritty. I know you had JVO, James Van Osdell, on the show a while back, and he was talking about kind of how much I don't think he likes dark and gritty. I'm the opposite. So Spider-Man looks like a lot of fun to me.
As much as I said that the reboot was coming way too soon, I wasn't excited about it. As I saw the previews, saw some of the action scenes, I'm giving it a mild interest as well, Matt. I mean, three interests here
three.
On Cinema Jaw.
Yeah.
Some of the action scenes look pretty intense.
It
that
looks
one,
really cool.
Yeah, where Spider-Man's falling off the building and that huge antenna thing is falling down on him.
Yeah.
I thought, I'll be there. I'll see it eventually.
Every new piece of footage that they release, it kind of grabs me a little more. Like, it definitely has that dark feel, but it's also some pretty cool action pieces. I think it's going to be a great popcorn movie. It's Spider-Man. Come on.
Plus Emma Stone. I mean, who doesn't love Emma Stone?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. She's Hollywood's new it girl, sort of, isn't she?
Yeah. Although I think it's weird that they had her playing Gwen Stacy when she's this like famous redhead, and it's like, you know,
we have a segment coming up later called Cinema War where we each had to choose like between Gwen Stacy or Kirsten Dunst or Emma Stone or Kirsten Dunst, and I actually noted that one is a redhead playing a blonde and the other's a blonde playing a redhead.
Bizarro world.
Yeah.
Very strange.
So three interesteds here for The Amazing Spider-Man on Cinema Jaw. And speaking of new movies, Matt, you got out and saw Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
I did. I went to New 400 did not have it playing, so I didn't feel guilty going up to the Evanston Cinemark Theater and checking it out in the 3D XD version. And I got to tell you that this movie is a lot of fun. All right, don't sit down and expect anything too cerebral or too rooted in actual history, because you won't find it.
Wait, he wasn't really a vampire hunter?
Is that what you're telling
us? I know, and it's surprising, right?
Revisionist.
But I will say this, for fans of the book, also don't go in expecting too much of the book, because they definitely adapted this screenplay for the screen and left out a lot of the little details that were in the book, which was, I don't want to say disappointing to me, but I thought the whole thing came together pretty well, although I would have liked to have seen a bit more of those things from the book, a little bit more of the violence.
And from what I could tell, I've read the book as well, and just seeing the previews, I remember thinking, like, man, the action just seems a little bit over the top.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't feel that way reading the book. I mean, there was some action. There was some gore in the book.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this just looks like video game blood all everywhere. Is that how it came across in the 3D?
Absolutely. And that's seriously, it's the best part. It's like, what if Abraham Lincoln was in Kill Bill? That's what we find out. I mean, like, the scenes where he's swinging the axe around and it's like ultra slow motion and the blood is just squirting all the way across the screen. It's just great. It is seriously awesome, especially in 3D. I didn't find the 3D distracting or headache-inducing. It was just good. Great action movie. Again, fans of the book might be a little let down, but I think the regular, you know, summer popcorn people are really going to enjoy this one. So,
how many Jaws, Matt?
A solid three.
Wow. Three Jaws for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
It's a good movie. I will say there was a couple of awkward moments where, you know, because the topic of slavery is very important to the plot of this movie.
Right.
And a couple of parts where I almost was like, is this kind of disrespectful to the history of our country? I don't know. So I'll leave that up to you guys to decide. Ultimately, I decided no. It's just fun that they're adapting this to that and sort of cramming in a vampire story into the history of our country. And I think they treated it with respect, but
good
some
deal.
People might disagree.
Good deal. Three Jaws for Abraham Lincoln. And another new movie also opening up in theaters is Savages. Whole drug deal going on, a lot of action, and it's directed by Oliver Stone, and he is our subject of Jaw 101 this week, which is one subject, one word. We threw it out to the Jawheads on Twitter, and we each got a word, I hope, to try to describe Oliver Stone. And I'll go first.
Okay.
And my word is outspoken. Always very on the political edge, and I think every movie he has a comment on society or the subject matter, more so than your average director. I, for me, would say Oliver Stone, outspoken. How about you, Haima?
Controversial. I mean, obviously, his movies are always very... There's always lots of discussion going on behind them. Okay. It's never anything where people are just like, oh, I just saw the Oliver Stone movie, and it's a nice, feel-good, like, summer... kind of like popcorn movie.
Yeah, he's actually almost the opposite of like Ron Howard. Ron Howard always, they say, plays it too safe. When there's something controversial in his film, he sort of takes the high road and doesn't like go after it the way Oliver Stone would.
Right.
Matt, what do you got for Oliver Stone?
You know, this is a tough one, man. Let's go to the Jawheads first. I'll think of one.
Yeah, a couple of our favorites we listed here.
All right, Sucker Howell, so it says burdensome.
See, a lot of people don't like Oliver Stone.
A little too heavy for some. Yeah. And then Joshua Pash says galvanizing. I would agree with that, too.
I agree.
I would have to say, I'm going to use some hyphens here and cheat, back and to the left.
Going off that JFK movie.
Yeah, that just stuck with me. I don't know why.
Well, Jawheads, listening to this, if we missed a word that describes Oliver Stone better than that, and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw and let us know what it is.
My real one would be legendary. I mean, he's a absolutely a legendary American director, so there we go.
Now, I don't know if Savages or Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is going to get a reboot somewhere down the line.
Probably.
But you never know with Hollywood. But that is our subject because of The Amazing Spider-Man coming out in theaters. A very fast turnaround for a rebooted series. We decided to look at the reboots, movies that we would like to see rebooted, and some of our five favorite maybe that have already been rebooted. I'm going to get us started off this weekend. And it's a pick because I had trouble looking at films that were rebooted in series in general that I really liked. I had a few that I thought were really worthy, and this fifth one is probably the least worthy of my group. Came out in 2006, and I'm speaking of Superman Returns.
I like that pick. It's bold.
It is bold, and the main reason I picked this one is for Kevin Spacey.
I would agree, yeah, as Lex Luthor.
He had a fantastic role in there. Brandon Roth was an okay Superman. He didn't have any of the charisma.
He was great as Clark Kent. Haima, have you seen this one?
I have not seen any of the Superman movies.
Oh, well, I figured as such a Batman fan, you would...
Yeah, I'm such a Batman fan.
Fair enough.
He's such a Batman fan that he stays away from Superman.
You know, they just never looked particularly interesting to me. I know it's blasphemy.
No, I think it's fine.
The other thing I did was during the research of the reboots, I took a look at the last one in between the span. So that one came out in 2006. The Superman prior to that was Superman IV, Quest for Peace, which came out way back in 1987. So if my math is correct, we were looking at almost 20 years, 19 years in between Supermans there.
Yeah.
Quite a long time. And I really did like appreciated the baby between Lois Lane and Superman. That sort of made the whole reboot worth sort of delving into. And that's what I like about that reboot. At least it had something to say and carry the story somewhere else. Some of these, they don't have that.
I have to agree with you, man. That is a good pick.
Yeah. So that was my number five. We throw it over to Haimo. What do you got sitting there?
Well, you know, I kind of have a couple different categories. So I guess I'll start with one of my favorite reboots, the Batman movies. The Christopher Nolan series that's about to wrap up right now. The end of the last Batman franchise was so embarrassing. You know, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, those were just
terrible.
Just brutal.
Yeah.
It's like they were made for MST3K. You know,
right.
Like,
especially Batman and Robin. That was just,
yeah.
I couldn't even watch it. So
it's just embarrassing.
Yes.
So then when they came along and did like Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and then, you know, I'm really, really excited for Dark Knight Rises. Those, I just totally, they're just great movies. They're easy to love. In my opinion, I know not everybody is a fan.
Yeah. It comes up later on my list. I agree with you. These are definitely one of the better reboots for sure.
Yeah.
Matt, what do you got sitting at five?
You know, it's funny because I'm rethinking this. This one hasn't come out yet. It comes out in 2013.
Oh, boy.
And I'm going with Man of Steel. I'm really excited to see this one.
This is a reboot of a reboot.
It's a reboot of a reboot. And you know what made me rethink this is you mentioning Superman and Lois's baby. And I forgot how much I really enjoyed that element and wanted to see it get explored. Unfortunately, it was not in the cards. Zack Snyder comes up with yet another reboot. But doesn't it? I mean, they got Superman way the guy who's playing him. It's just right on, you know, dead on.
I agree, but I haven't researched it enough, Matt. Are you telling me they're basically just starting afresh with
Henry Cavill's the guy's name?
They're starting afresh with him coming down to the planet Earth, just like the original.
Yeah, no, we're gonna see Superman updated for today, you know, for the modern times, mm-hmm. and this is an origin story. I mean, they are rebooting it. Whereas Superman, the most recent one,
yeah, with Brandon Routh
was more of a continuation of the original trilogy. So.
Right, it sort of snuck in. It sort of acted like 3 and 4 didn't take place, but that 1 and 2 did, and he had a relationship with Lois.
We're all trying to forget 3 and 4.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. So. All right, swings us into our number fours. And at number four, I have a movie that came out last year, starred James Franco and Andy Serkis, and as bad as Tim Burton's reboot of Planet of the Apes was, that one came out in 2001. Lo and behold, 10 years later, Rise of the Planet of the Apes redeems itself. Big fan of the original Planet of the Apes and even the second one, Beneath the Planet of the Apes. And here, Rise of the Planet of the Apes sort of goes all the way to the beginning of how the apes even had some type of intelligence and where the whole story really started from. Couldn't be happier with this film. You still haven't seen it, Matt, and I keep pushing it for you.
I know. I really got to get off my ass and see this one.
Not so much talking. There's only a couple words spoken by the apes because they're just getting the intelligence. Great scene on the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. And I'm actually looking forward to what they do with the sequel to it.
It looks creepy. Have you seen it?
I have not seen any of the Planet of the Apes movies.
Well, do yourself a favor. Yeah. Rise of the Planet of the Apes is really worth checking out.
Haimo, we're going to fill up your neck.
Yeah. I know, tonight. Man. It's like, when I was invited on the show, I was like, okay, I'm happy to come on, but I want to put this out there up front that I just am so thematically undereducated, or cinematically undereducated, and I'm fully aware of that.
That's fine. If I'm ever sick, you can fill in as co-host.
Yeah,
man.
You fit right in Matt's seat right there. All right, swings us over to Hyman's number four.
You know what? I feel like I should have made this number five because I'm more passionate about the Batman movies in this franchise, but another reboot that I liked was the Halloween movies by Rob Zombie. Especially the first one, more than the second one. It was just so enormously heavy and bleak and dark. I don't know. All things that I like in my cinema, so I really dug it.
Yeah, and I think it put a lot of critics sort of shut them up a little bit because everybody was wondering, Rob Zombie, what can he direct? And I have not seen this one, but everything I hear is that this was quite the excellent film.
I loved it. You know, yeah. It was like really creative what he did with Michael Myers, bringing us to his childhood and showing us kind of what turned him into the monster that he is today. The only criticism I would have is the last scene, the big chase, he's kind of more like, he's not that menacing shape that's just in the shadows. He's more like a wrestler just kind of pounding through walls and stuff. It's
like he's like
It's more like Jason Voorhees.
No, I was going to say the Juggernaut.
Yeah.
From X-Men, like,
very
he
much
kind of
so.
Becomes the Juggernaut or something like that. But just the mood and the atmosphere in those movies. I like what Rob Zombie does with those because all of his movies are so, like, just oppressively heavy and just kind of hopeless. And he does that great in, like, Devil's Rejects and stuff. And so
Donald Sutherland plays Loomis, right?
Yeah.
That was well cast.
Good pick. Matt swings us over to your number four.
Speaking of horror, I have another soon-to-be remake, very polarizing, very controversial, 2013 slated, The Evil Dead. And Sam Raimi is on board as producer. Alvarez, I can't pronounce his first name. I think it's Fede Alvarez, is the producer, or I'm sorry, director. We can be sure there's going to be a cameo at least from, you know, good old Ash, the original Bruce Campbell.
I think a lot of fans, I agree, Matt, aren't really wholeheartedly behind this. I don't know.
I think, I'm going to put my trust in Sam Raimi. Although those original films are absolutely near and dear and classic, you know, some of my favorite movies, those aren't going away. They'll still be there. So let's see what else Sam's got up his sleeve and, you know, let's wait to see what it is, because I think he's going to give us something really good.
You're always a fan of the reboot, Matt, and swings us into our threes, and this is where, Haima, he already had mentioned it, Batman Begins. This is where it fits in on my list.
Yeah.
And it could even be higher. The only reason it's not and where it sits in at number three is two reasons. One is that the first two Batmans, me and Matt agree, the Tim Burton films are quite excellent in their own. It's this bottom two that were just off track. And then secondly, I like Batman Begins, but not nearly as much as I like The Dark Knight. So between the two, it squeezes in at even number three on my list. I like that.
Yeah, I think that's well placed.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I think Dark Knight's the best one.
And I did want to mention that Batman Robin came out in 1987. The reboot came out in 2005. So again, if my math is correct, we're only looking at 8 years there.
Yeah.
13 years. Wow. Long time.
That is a long time.
Yeah.
So between Batman films.
That was my number three. Batman Begins. Swings us over into Haima's number three.
Yeah, I have a couple of reboots that I would like to see.
Yeah.
The first one.
This is interesting.
Green Lantern. I'd like to see a good Green Lantern movie get made, because I like Green Lantern, I like him in the comics, I like what Geoff Johns, who is a writer at DC, what Geoff Johns has done with Green Lantern over the last, 5-6 years, has been awesome. And I saw some of the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern on TV when it was like on one of the movie channels, and I just could not stay interested.
I tell you, I actually just watched it this week for the first time, got it on... Blu-ray.
Bad choice.
And let me tell you, Matt, this thing, holy cow, this was painful to watch, to sit through. I believe I tweeted out afterwards, I'd rather jump on a bicycle with its seat missing, and I think that would be more enjoyable than watching that crap by Ryan Reynolds.
Ugh. Oh, man, it really does suck. I mean,
yeah, man, it bummed me out, because I know that there could be a good Green Lantern movie made. I know there could be. I don't know who would direct it, but I know that it could be done so much better than it has been done.
I have to agree, and I went into this as a Green Lantern novice. I didn't even know what his ring did. And so when I found out that his power was that he could actually create anything that he wants, I thought, oh my God, this is going to be so cool. What a way to waste that ring. I mean,
giant fists.
Just ridiculous.
Yeah. Could have been so much more. Could have been so much better.
Good pick. Yeah. Good pick. Yeah. Matt, what do you got sitting at three?
All right, at number three, an actual reboot that's already come out. First on my list. I'm talking about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the American version.
Ooh, I don't know. Controversial pick here, Matt.
Listen, I like the original film, but I think that this one is superior, and not just because it's in my native tongue, but I genuinely like the touches that they chose for Salander, you know, for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Sure.
For Lisbeth. That's the name I was looking for. You know, at the end, I think you and I talked about this in another episode, she's got the gift that she's bringing to Blomquist, right?
Which I didn't like already.
Loved it. See, now that was in the book. They gave her that moment of vulnerability. She's not like, yeah, she's tough, but she's not impervious. And she was starting to fall in, I don't want to ruin it, so I'll leave it there. But I like that they explored her character a little bit more deeply, and I felt that it was better paced.
Well, the other thing, too, about this pick is it's more closer to like a flat-out remake than it is a reboot. They're changing the series very little. I'd have to see what they're going to do with the second one to even know if it's going to qualify as a reboot, as much as it is just an English remake of the original.
Well, I mean, okay, so maybe it's a little bit of a controversial pick.
Yeah,
but
controversial. I like it. Matt's always got one on his list. All right, swings us into our number twos. And at number two, boy, I almost could have had this one at number one. Huge fan, and mainly because I really didn't like the series at all anymore. And I'm speaking of the 2009 J.J. Abrams film Star Trek.
I have this higher on my list.
Nice. Number two for me came out in 2009. The Star Trek that preceded it came out in 2002. It was Star Trek Nemesis. So we only had a 7-year span there, but I hadn't seen...
Was Nemesis a Next Generation film?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. I hadn't seen any of the Star Treks, I think, since Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. More or less gave up on it. Just, I'm not a Trekkie by any means. And next thing I know, I get see the previews, I hear the reviews, well, yeah, I'll go check out this Star Trek reboot. I'm a fan. I love what they did.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
It's yeah.
great. Absolutely good pick.
You have not seen this one.
I've never seen any of the Star Trek movies.
Did you watch Next Gen on TV when you
I
were
did
kid?
Like Next Gen on TV. Yeah.
See? Me too.
That was the Star Trek I grew up on. I just never got around to, you know, it was something that sometimes I'm a little put off by these franchises like a Doctor Who or a Star Trek that have this just wealth of continuity because as a comics fan, my mindset is now I have to tackle this whole thing. Versus, I think, a casual moviegoer might just think, like, oh, I'm going to go see the new Star Trek movie. In my head, it's like, now I have to commit to watch all the Star Trek shows, all the movies, and I'm just like, I don't have time for that.
I'm with you on that.
All right, Haima, what do you got sitting at number two?
Just to demonstrate my just embarrassingly terrible taste in movies, I would like to see, you know, Saw rebooted. It kind of got really, really ridiculous there at the end after, like, 7 movies. But at the beginning, it was, you know, especially that first one, it's a really great, like, suspenseful kind of horror flick, just kind of about a nightmare situation. So I'd love to see them kind of maybe restarted or even continue the original series, but bring it back a little bit to what it was in Saw 1, which was almost has no, like, almost minimal violence compared to the later installments. And it's more about suspense and mood and terror and just this kind of nightmare situation.
Yeah, and as I always say, the great thing about a fantastic horror film is that you get this great scary film to be able to rewatch every Halloween.
Yeah.
The bad thing is you have another 8 sequels that are going to follow it because
right.
that's the way they go.
Yeah, exactly. So less sequels, more of the original.
Gotcha, gotcha. I like it. I could see that going.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
What do you got sitting at 2, Matt?
All right, at number 2, I have Peter Jackson back in the director's seat for the upcoming The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. I mean, what fanboy seriously isn't wetting their pants over this movie?
Again, is it really a reboot, Matt?
Well, it's...
Justify yourself here.
It's okay, this is why I call it a reboot. And this goes for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo also. It's not just one film, it's 2 films, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's rebooting the entire trilogy of Lord of the Rings films. Maybe it's a stretch, but I'm sticking to my guns on this.
Yeah, and technically there was a Hobbit animated film out there.
Yeah, and it's a prequel too,
yeah.
So.
It kind of seems more like a Prometheus type situation where this is in that universe and it's like an earlier chapter, but it's not necessarily the direct... It's not happening 5 minutes before the first Lord of the Rings.
Right.
True. You know what I mean?
Right. I agree. It's we could almost do a series of our favorite prequels these days, because that's all the rage, it seems.
Yeah.
Prequels, reboots, and remakes, man. I mean, where would we be without them?
We'd have to watch original movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy. What then? I tell you. At number one, we swing it into our number ones. Can't believe this wasn't on your list, man. It's almost embarrassing at this point, because I think by far it's one of the best reboots. And I'm speaking of the 2006 Daniel Craig Casino Royale reboot, the James Bond series.
That was a total miss on my part.
Die Another Day was the last Pierce Brosnan film. Came out in 2002. So it was only 4 years, but that's about the span of Bond. It's about 4 years.
3 or 4, yeah.
Yeah, and if they're continuing with the same character playing Bond, you'll get them maybe even every 2. I think You'll see them 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
They get a brand new guy playing Bond. You get like a 4 year hiatus there. Here I am. I hadn't seen the Bonds or cared about the Bonds at all. They were getting so ridiculous with all the gadgets. In comes Daniel Craig, brings a realism to them, sort of copied a little bit of the Bourne series because that's what was hot, but it just regenerated. It just sort of refreshed the Bond series. Now I'm a big fan. Quantum of Solace, was that the second one?
Yeah.
Not that great, but I'm still looking forward to the third one because Casino Royale was so good.
Casino Royale was awesome, man. I mean, they really grabbed Bond by the balls and brought him back to that brutish character that he was always meant to be. So, yeah, I agree with you, man. Good pick.
That was my number one. Haima, what do you got for your favorite reboot or one that you want to see?
You know, my last category that I have is a reboot I'm excited for, and I didn't know this was going to play so much into the episode when I selected this, but Spider-Man. I was already excited about this Spider-Man. I don't know. Mine, I don't know if they're, like, numbered, so I don't want to say it's, like, my number one, but it's something I'm excited about. It's a reboot that I'll go see, and I know it's really soon, but I also feel like if he's not dancing in this one because of Venom or whatever, like, sure. Like, let's get another take on it.
The third one really did leave a bad taste, I think, in everybody's mouth.
Yeah, especially that dancing scene, man.
Matt, what do you got sitting at number one? I think we could call it.
Yeah, no, it's Star Trek. I mentioned it before. I honestly, this is what I think about Star Trek. When you say I'm rebooting Star Trek, that is a huge bite to take, you know? And everyone said, it's going to fail, it's going to suck. And it really wowed everyone, blew everyone's hairs back. I mean, you've got some super nerdy people at the core of Star Trek fandom. I mean, these guys are really tough to please, and I think they did it.
I agree. Actually, thinking about it from that standpoint, you're actually absolutely correct. For me, a casual fan, I don't care that much about the Trek universe. So for me to step in, oh yeah, I really liked it. That was very enjoyable. But you're right. Some of these fans are going to scrutinize this film. They're gonna hate it almost 100% going in, 99%.
Right.
So you really got to nail it for them to come around and say, hell yeah, I'm on board with this reboot.
Yeah, somebody else playing Kirk, somebody else playing Spock. I mean, that's blasphemy, but J.J. Abrams pulled it off. And he did it with taste and style.
He did. I can't wait. I think we got maybe 2 years till the next one, so it's been delayed a little bit. But I'm definitely eagerly anticipating it.
As am I.
Yeah. If we missed a reboot, Jawheads, and you're listening to this at home and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Let us know what we missed. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we come back, we got DVD reviews, 21 Jump Street and Project Nim. Matt versus Haima in movie trivia. We're at the halfway point of 2012, so we're doing 2012 halfway point movie trivia. So everybody's going to be familiar with that. And then also a cinema war that's going to look at Spider-Man's two women.
Love interests.
Yes. Yep. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Stick around. Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. With Terminator Salvation, Christian Bale became the seventh actor to play John Connor. In T2, the adult John Connor was played by Michael Edwards, the teenage John Connor was played by Edward Furlong, and the infant John Connor, who appeared during Sarah Connor's dream sequence of the nuclear attack, was played by Dalton Abbott. Nick Stahl played the fourth John Connor in Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines. Thomas Decker played John Connor in the TV series Terminator The Sarah Connor Chronicles. And John DeVito played a younger John in a flashback. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
And we are back on CinemaJaw. Sitting in this whole entire episode is Haima Black. And you can check out Haima Black's podcast at dynastypodcasts.com.
Actually, soundcloud.com/dynastypodcasts.
There we go.
Yes. Thanks, Haima.
Yeah.
And there's a Tumblr, too, right?
Yeah, dynastypodcast.tumblr. We're working on building like a one-site kind of catch-all, so... Yeah.
Make it easy for the jawheads to catch.
Absolutely. You know, follow along at Dynasty Podcast. That might be easiest.
There we go. And before we get to Cinema War, Matt, we had got some fan emails and we did some giveaways that we wanted to get to.
Yes, indeed we did. We always love getting fan letters. Seriously, it really makes our day. This one came from Dan Fields, who wrote, "Hello, gentlemen. I recently started listening to CinemaJaw, and I wanted to let you know you guys run a great show. I'm a movie critic for the California Literary Review and a movie podcast junkie. And even though I'm a long way from Chicago now, I lived there for about 8 years. I think it's one of the most underrated cinema towns. By a wild coincidence, I also worked a stint at the new 400 Theater when they were first up and running again. I heard you plug them on the podcast and I say, right on. They were very good to me. And if you're over there soon, give the best to give my best to the management. Anyway, keep the good stuff coming. Just wanted to let you know you've got a brand new fan. Best wishes, Dan Fields.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Very nice, man.
Isn't that great?
That is so cool.
Yeah. I love getting that. Seriously made my day.
Absolutely. And also wanted to throw a shout out to, you know, we always say at the end of the episodes, do follow us on Twitter and follow us on Facebook. And we've been doing some giveaways. We recently gave away The Crow on Blu-ray. Coupon Cat out in Bensonville, Illinois was a winner. And also, we give away new 400 t-shirts. Matt Stafford, who follows us on Facebook, won that t-shirt. We sent it to him. So please, actually, do follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook as we're doing more and more giveaways.
Speaking of giveaways, I want to thank a guy named Mike who is kind enough to donate to CinemaJaw using our handy-dandy donate button on CinemaJaw.com. Mike Crate, Michael Crate, he said a token of appreciation, enjoying the podcast. Thanks a lot. That is seriously awesome.
Awesome. So please, always shoot us a tweet or send us an email. We're always here, Matt and Rye at CinemaJaw.com.
Yeah, and even if you don't want to donate, keep those fan letters coming. That seriously, it's priceless.
Yes.
We appreciate it.
Matt, it brings us to a segment we call
Cinema War.
This is where me and Matt battle back and forth on different subjects each week, and our guest, Haima, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this particular Cinema War. And it's important, Haima, because we're battling for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever me and Matt want to.
No pressure.
Now, we have a new Spider-Man movie coming out, so we thought we would ask our guest producer. We should mention that Elias from the Woodsugars is guest producing again this week. Check out the Woodsugars at woodsugars.com and their YouTube channel.
Yes, that's youtube.com/woodsugars. Hello, Jawheads. And I'll go ahead and read the Cinema War topic, and that is Spidey's Girls. Who's better, Emma Stone or Kirsten Dunst? Matt, you'll be fighting for Emma Stone. Rye, you'll be fighting for Kirsten Dunst. Let the Cinema War begin.
Matt, Kirsten Dunst can play the pretty girl like Emma in films such as Spider-Man, but what makes her so much better is the way she plays darker characters like in last year's Melancholia.
Keep your melancholia. I got two words for you. Gwen Stacy. She's Spider-Man's first true love, so of course Emma Stone is far superior to the true fans who've been waiting for this story to be told.
Yeah, but see, Dunst has been acting since she's been a little girl, Matt. Who can forget her awesome role in Interview with the Vampire? Her experience alone as an actress makes her the obvious pick.
All right, Kirsten Dunst has her good parts, and she looks great in a wet t-shirt and all, but Emma Stone has way better filmography with The Help, Zombieland, and now Spider-Man, just to name a few.
I tell you though, Matt, Dunst was a great Mary Jane. The upside-down kiss in Spider-Man is classic, but she's also outstanding in smaller indie films such as The Virgin Suicides and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
She's got some good roles, and the point I brought up earlier about her being a blonde playing a redhead and Stone being a redhead playing a blonde, that aside, I gotta say it, Kirsten Dunst is old and starting to get a little out of shape. If you were Spidey, why wouldn't you trade up for the younger blonde?
Matt, it feels like Dunst has been around forever, but let me remind you, she's only 30 years old. She has the looks and acting range to continue being a force in Hollywood for years to come. Kristen over Emma any day of the week. And twice on Sunday.
In all seriousness, Gwen Stacy is the person who taught Spidey the lesson that with great power comes great responsibility. Sure, Uncle Ben might have said it, told it to him, but ultimately with her death, Gwen proved it to him. So her character is way more important to the Spidey mythos, and that's why Emma Stone is better.
Wow. We are at a gridlock. No surprise here, Matt.
Yeah.
We got Spidey's girls on the table. Kirsten Dunst, Emma Stone, we throw it over to Haima. What'd you think of this Cinema War?
You know, man, I think there's a lot of really solid points on both sides, and I think Kirsten Dunst has some really great acting range and has been in great films, and I think she was a really good Mary Jane, but I'm going to have to give it to Emma Stone for two reasons. One, I just think Emma Stone is cooler. I mean, she really is. I think that she brings a very young, hip, kind of edgy vibe to the Spider-Man story, and that's important because Spider-Man, especially in the comics, he's coming younger and younger, you know, and he's always been intended to be a character that a younger audience can relate to because he's not invincible like Superman, he's not rich like Batman, he's not infallible, you know, he's kind of a younger everyman, so you need a younger, cooler girl to be his girl, and also, like Matt said, you know, the death of Gwen Stacy really did kind of mark a turning point for Spider-Man. That really was kind of like a, if you look at Batman, his parents dying is what kind of set him on that path, just like Spider-Man learning, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, set him on that path. But then when Jason Todd died, when Gwen Stacy died, these are the markers in these heroes' adults' lives that really demonstrated to them how high the stakes were and how serious this was. So I gotta
go. Damn these comic geeks. They stick together. They know comics like the back of their hand. I knew I was gonna lose this one. Matt, here's your 20 seconds of jaw time.
All right, here we go. Sony Pictures, pay attention. Give Spider-Man back to Marvel. We know that the only reason you're making the Spider-Man movie, as excited for it as we are, is because you need to keep your little claws in the character. We want to see him in the cartoons. We want to see him in other forms. So stop being D-bags and let Marvel play with him. We put him in the next Avengers movie. That's well my done. 20 seconds.
Well done, Matt. Well done. Hey, before we get to 2012 halfway through movie trivia, a couple DVD reviews for the Jawheads.
Lay them on me.
First, Matt, is 21 Jump Street. Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum make this classic TV show into a hilarious feature film. Much of the humor is derived from the two going back to high school and not fitting in with the groups they thought they would. Times change, trends change, and the writing hits the aspect out of the park. As much as I despise Channing Tatum, I could stomach him here, although Jonah Hill is really the star of the show. Johnny Depp fans, no need to fret. The star does make a nice size cameo. This is a fun film that gets the tone right. Give it a spin. Ride the movie guy's grade. 3 Jaws for 21 Jump Street. Solid B. I liked it.
I still haven't seen it, so maybe I will now.
Out on DVD. You got no reason to hold up now.
I think it might even be on Netflix. So
this makes me want to see it because I love Jonah Hill. I just think he's just so great at being filthy and foul and just, you know, some comedians, as they get a little bit older, they kind of soften up and they start doing movies for kids, and he's just foul, man. I dig it.
Yeah, you'll love this one. He really steals the show.
Yeah.
And also, Matt, a small documentary I called Project Nim. What happens when a bunch of hippies in the 70s decide to raise a baby chimp as a human to see if they can teach him sign language? That question is answered in this bizarre documentary that is filled with archival footage and present-day interviews of the people that were involved in the project. The story unfolds very dramatically as we begin to get attached to Nim, the chimp, and care about his well-being. Did the hippies give the chimp pot to smoke up with them? Sure. Did a lady actually breastfeed the chimp? Sure. Intrigued, Matt? You should be. Give this one a spin. Ride the movie guy's grade. 2.5 Jaws. Project Nim. Really, really out there.
Just tell me this. Does it have at least somewhat of a happy ending?
Yeah, but okay. I think also sort of sad, too, because Nim goes through a lot. He does do some sign languages. It's amazing how smart the chimps are. But his journey doesn't stop there after those, like, 5 years early on. He goes to different areas around the country.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So you got to see it.
Yeah.
You got to see it. And I don't want to ruin anything because as it's going on, all of a sudden you really start to care for the chimp here. And
this sounds like it's almost a prequel to Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
It would definitely be one of the parents would be Rise of the Planet of the Apes for sure.
Nice.
So there's the DVD reviews for you, Jawheads. Brings us to a segment of trivia. We are halfway through 2012. So what better time to do halfway through 2012 movie trivia? Works like this. We go back and forth. You each get a shot at the question, but there are steals if one of them doesn't know it. Haima, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. And our producer, our guest producer from the Wood Sugars, Elias here, has clues to all the questions. So you get one rescue each. Just say, rescue me, Elias, and he'll help you out with a clue.
I'm going to let Matt go first since, you know, this is your show. So why don't you show me how it's done?
All right. Here we go, Matt. Question number one in halfway through 2012 movie trivia.
All right.
The big flop so far this year came from Disney in the form of this movie that took place on Mars and starred Taylor Kitsch.
John Carter.
1-0, Matt K. We throw this over to Haima. Question number two. Liam Neeson finds himself fighting wolves in Alaska in this February release.
The Gray.
1-1. You got competition here, Matt.
Yeah.
He knows new movies and horror films. Question three. Matt, The Vow saw Channing Tatum try to get this actress to fall in love with him again because she has amnesia. Channing Tatum and who in The Vow?
All right. Rescue me, Elias.
Question number three, Elias. What actress was starring alongside Channing Tatum in The Vow?
Your clue is Notebook actress.
Oof. Does Matt know The Notebook?
No, I don't.
Hand on the buzzer. Even a guess, Matt?
I don't know. Yeah, I got nothing. You know,
got a chance for a steal.
Is it Rachel McAdams? Is that her name? I'm surprised I knew
that. Paima's up 2-1.
I don't know how I knew that.
Big Notebook fan?
Yeah, big fan of The Notebook.
Saw in The Notebook. Those are mine.
It is 2-1, Paima, and this question is over to him. Lucasfilms gave us a movie about African-American pilots. What was the name of that movie? It was by Lucasfilms. African-American pilots, I believe, in World War II.
Oof, I don't know. I'm going to hold on to my rescue me, so I don't think I know that one.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy,
I got
Matt.
Nothing, man. I mean, if it was, I can guess if it was like a blaxploitation film, I would call it like Black Wings or
this
something.
This came out about
a terrible. It's terrible.
A half ago. We were looking
for
Red Tails. Red Tails.
I was close.
Oh, my goodness. Still 2-1, Haima. This question is over to Matt.
It was a color and the name of a part of a plane, you know?
All right, Matt. There have been two Snow White movies so far this year. What was the name of the one in which Julia Roberts starred as the Evil Queen?
Mirror, Mirror.
Ties it up at two. Throw this question over to Haima. This Means War saw Chris Pine and Tom Hardy fight over what actress? Ooh. This Means War. I think they were both kind of spies or something. They were fighting over this actress. You do have a rescue. There's only 8 questions.
I don't want to use the rescue yet. I know that this isn't right, but it's not Angelina Jolie, is it?
Wow.
Just holding on to that rescue.
Hold it on to the rescue. I don't know until when, but Matt, you got a chance for a steal.
Read it one more time. I'm sorry.
This Means War was the name of the movie. Saw Chris Pine and Tom Hardy fight over what actress?
I have no idea, man.
We were looking for Reese's Pieces, Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, geez.
Wow. Still 2-2. Question number 7 is over to Matt. The Hunger Games turned this actress who played Katniss into a huge star.
Oh, man, wait. Now, I know her name. Give me a second here.
Oh, boy.
I know it. It's just...
We are on a tight limit here, Matt.
The James playing in the background is just not helping.
Oh, right, right. I know we talked earlier about the chimp smoking weed. Maybe Matt had some before the show as well, as he cannot remember. 2-2, big ball game here. Gonna have to buzz you, Matt. You got a guess?
I know her name. I just can't come up with it right now.
Haima, you got a chance for a steal and blow this game wide open, or you can use
got your rescue still.
Or you can use a rescue.
I think even with the rescue though, I wouldn't know this one.
No,
I just don't know her name.
Well, you might as well use it. There's only 8 questions.
I'll use it next time.
All right. We were looking for Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Still 2-2, and it's the last question of the game. You can win it on a walk-off right here. Haima, in The Raven, who portrayed Edgar Allan Poe?
Oh, I know this one. Easy. John Cusack. Chicago boy.
Wow. 3-2. That's ball game right there. Well done. Well done.
Put her there, sir.
Thank you.
Well done.
Haima, there was a jawbreaker, we call it, in case there was a tie. Which Tyler Kitsch flop is actually a better overall film, John Carter or Battleship? Got to say one of the two.
John Carter.
That is incorrect. Absolutely incorrect. It was Battleship. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
The real jawbreaker was this.
It's been 2 years with this joke now.
The age of Reese Witherspoon, closest to. Matt, what do you got?
Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah.
36.
Absolute ringer. She's 36. Wouldn't even have to throw it over to you. Well done, Matt. You're hitting them right on the head.
I'm good with the age, man.
Yeah.
I'm good with the age.
But it doesn't matter. Didn't come down to a jawbreaker. Haima wins this one 3-2. Well done.
Well done.
I'm surprised as anyone.
If Jennifer Lawrence, damn you.
And it should also be noted, he still has his rescue in his pocket.
That's true. Wow. If hey, you ever come back, you get two rescues
next time.
They roll over.
A couple Hollywood headlines, Matt, before we kill this thing.
Sure. Get a load of this one. Bourne Legacy producer Frank Marshall says his dream is to have Jeremy Renner and Matt Damon star in the next film.
Well, we got, obviously, this is sort of actually a reboot. It sort of ties in with our theme this week as they're redoing the Bourne series. Jeremy Renner is like just basically like another, you know, Bourne agent. He's just not Jason Bourne.
It's going to suck.
I really don't know. I don't like this at all. I was so happy with the three films, and I wish it would have just ended there. So I, in a way, I'm actually cheering against this and hope it just is terrible. All right, Matt, get a load of this. Charlie Kaufman, who wrote Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, his musical satire, Frank and Francis, about Hollywood and the Internet, which has Steve Carell, Jack Black, Nicolas Cage, Kevin Kline, Elizabeth Banks, all set to star.
Wow.
Has tough questions about it ever coming to fruition now because of numerous late and pushback postponements due to Kaufman's busy schedule.
Get off your ass, Charlie. Make the movie.
I agree. I love everything this guy writes. It's got a great cast. I'd love to see this thing come to the big screen.
Yeah, Kevin Kline is...
Elizabeth Banks is awesome. Yeah. Everything she's in.
She is.
She's fantastic.
I agree. I agree. So you heard it here, Charlie. I know you're listening to Cinema Jaw.
He listens every week. All right. Listen to this one. The Avengers has become the third movie ever to earn over $600 million at the domestic box office. It is reaching that milestone on its 54th day in theaters, which is a week longer than it took Avatar, 47 days. And the other film to gross $600 million is one of Rye, the movie guy's absolute favorites of all time. And I'm not joking. Titanic.
Sure. Why wouldn't it be, man? It's a fantastic film. You've seen this one, Haima.
I have seen Titanic. Whew. Yes.
Wipe the brow on past that one. It's a great film. That's why it crossed the $600 million mark.
Sure. It's a great film.
Yeah. You're just sour because you lost at trivia.
No, man. That movie's terrible, right? I can't believe you always take it out and trumpet it as one of the greatest films of all time.
Well, I throw these Hollywood headlines in there just because the mention of Titanic.
I know.
Oh, man. I tell you, a lot of fun doing Cinema Jaw. Brings us to the end of a great episode. First and foremost, we got to thank our guest, Haima Black. Again, work in the Jawheads. Check out your podcast and also find you online.
You know what? Follow me online, Haima Black, J-A-I-M-E, Black, all one word, and then soundcloud.com/dynastypodcast. And thank you guys so much for having me on tonight. This
was
a blast.
Thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Great guest. We also got to thank our guest producer, Elias from the Woodsugars. Again, where can we check out some of the Woodsugars comedy, Elias?
Yeah, it's woodsugars.com. Also, cinemajaw.com has a video commercial that we collaborated on, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, Elias' brother, Danny. Donnie is starring alongside me and Matt. Did a fantastic job, as did Elias.
Yeah,
thanks.
Also, I want to thank our sponsors, the New 400.
Yeah, MoviePass.
Yeah, definitely check out MoviePass.com. Enter Cinema Jaw as a code, and you'll save some money.
And thanks to Dan and Mike for writing in and donating.
Yeah, those and also Matt Stafford and Coupon Cat for participating in all our little games that we're playing on Trivia.
It's a nice little community we've built.
Yeah, sure is, Matt. So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
Cheers.
Where's my water?